Good evening and welcome to tonight's Monroe City Council meeting. This is the city council meeting for Tuesday, February 9th, 2016. The time right now is 7:01 p.m. Ms. Smoot, will you please read the call the roll?
Certainly. Council members present and establishing a quorum are Hanford, Cuddeback, Rasmussen, Camp, Davis, and Scarborough.
Thank you. And Councilmember Davis, will you please lead us in the pledge?
I pledge allegiance to the flag of the United States of America and to the republic for which it stands, one nation, under God, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all.
Thank you. First item that we have on our agenda this evening is under announcements and presentations. This is item number one. As you're aware, we have an opening on the Salary Commission, and in the late fall, early winter, I had the pleasure of interviewing Patrick Daniels. Tonight, I am requesting confirmation of Mr. Daniels to the Salary Commission. I feel that he's qualified. He was very articulate, and I feel that he will do well in the position of Salary Commission. Councilmember Cuddeback.
Sure. Welcome. I will make a motion to move to confirm the mayor's appointment of Patrick Daniels to the Salary Commission.
Second.
Thank you. I have a first from Councilmember Cuddeback, a second from Councilmember Hanford to confirm the mayor's appointment of Patrick Daniels to the Salary Commission. Any discussion on the motion? Seeing none, all in favor say aye.
Aye.
All opposed? Motion passes 6-0. Thank you very much. And Ms. Smoot will come forward and swear you in.
Patrick Daniels, you do solemnly swear or affirm that you will support the Constitution and laws of the United States and State of Washington and ordinances of the City of Monroe, and that you will faithfully and impartially perform and discharge the duties of a Salary Commissioner according to law and to the best of your ability and understanding.
I affirm. Thank you.
And congratulations, Commissioner Daniels.
Yeah.
Okay, the next item that we have on the agenda is comments from citizens. This is the time set aside for members of the audience to speak to the City Council on any issue related to the City of Monroe, except a quasi-judicial matter subject to a public hearing. Public comment is limited to 5 minutes per speaker. Ms. Smoot is getting the list to see if anybody has signed up. While she's doing that, is there anybody that would like to come forward to speak to this to Council this evening? Okay, seeing none, I suspect that there's nobody who has signed up on the list. Ms. Smith has come in and confirmed that. Thank you very much. We'll go ahead and move on to the consent agenda. Councilmember Camp.
Thank you. I move to approve the consent agenda.
Second.
I have a first from Councilmember Camp. I have a second from Councilmember Hanford to approve the consent agenda. Any discussion on the motion? Seeing none, all in favor say aye.
Aye.
All opposed? Motion passes. Did you vote, Councilmember?
Aye.
Motion passes 7-0. Please let the record show that Councilmember Gamble entered the room just in time for that vote. All right. The next item that we have on the agenda is unfinished business. This is unfinished business item number one, AB 16018, discussion strategic financial planning, capital/O&M/revenues. And it's opening up. Just a second. Start off with some capital planning on the electronic infrastructure. Okay, it just came up. Okay, so as you all are aware, about 2 weeks ago, we came forward to share some of the O&M costs that or O&M questions that we had related to service delivery. And if you recall, one of the things that I've been doing the last couple of years is just bringing forward a status quo budget. And what that means is, for the most part, status quo level of service. So a couple of weeks ago, what we talked about were some of the positions and some of the levels of service that that we had heard from either council members, planning commission, parks board members, citizens, that people were interested in us enhancing or increasing. We talked a little bit about that. Many of you had questions, and staff has pulled together some responses to those and still has a little bit more research to do on a couple of those, and we plan to bring those back for a more in-depth conversation in a couple of weeks. What we are here tonight is to do is to focus more on the capital component. So these are generally one-time expenditures for things like road improvement projects, parks projects, things like buildings that buildings that need to be repaired or replaced that are municipal buildings. Most of the focus here is on general fund funded.
Government funds.
Okay, just government funds. Okay. What will happen here is staff will go through and talk about those items. Do note that there are some capital items in here that are O&M related, so they're like ongoing street maintenance that might be a little bit different than what we're collecting the what we're receiving revenue on from sales tax. We'll talk a little bit about that, and those are long-term maintenance, and so that's what we'd be referring to with long-term maintenance. And then lastly, as time permits, I think Ms. Nelson will have the opportunity then to talk about different revenue sources. And again, the intent here is to come back in a couple weeks and continue the conversation and see what council would like in terms of a 2017 budget coming forward next year, whether it's a status quo budget, cuts on some things with enhancements on others, or enhancements on things in general. But as you know, council's responsible for policy and budget, so that we're not doing this in a condensed fall budget review. Doing this now allows us to be more considerate of the options that are being presented to council at this time. Before we begin, does anybody have any questions? Okay, seeing none, we're going to go ahead and move into presentations from staff. And the first item that we have will come from Mr. Feilberg, transportation plan. That's all.
The recently adopted 2015 to 2035 comprehensive planning includes $35.5 million of road improvements that are needed to maintain the adopted level of service with anticipated growth by the year 2035. The approved transportation impact fees that were approved by the council are only collect money to fund 19.4%, because that's the percentage of the traffic that needs those improvements that comes from inside the city. That comes from outside the city. So that extra money annualized over that 25 years is, or 20 years, is $644,000 per year that needs to come from either the general fund, grants, and the reciprocal traffic mitigation fees we've received from Snohomish County, that hopefully they remember to send us when they have things that happen out in Snohomish County. They're supposed to send us, is this enough money that we can collect for you? So that total there is a $16.1 million that needs to come from somewhere else.
Okay. And before you move on to the next item,
pause for questions.
Yes, please. So, and it was $19.4 million. I think I heard you say 19.4%.
Oh, okay. Sorry, 19.4 million.
So, does anybody have any questions about that, Councilmember Gamble?
So the transportation plan that includes the list of whatever 15.
Right. Case of projects. Right.
Okay. So that's basically those list of projects, and their totality would be that.
This, however, is a different list than the six-year transportation improvement program, which is basically a sub-list
of the main
of the big list,
the whole list. Right.
Right.
So okay.
It's contained in the comprehensive plan traffic study.
Okay. Thanks.
Okay. Anything further on transportation plan? Councilmember Cutterback.
So the transportation benefit district, though, the funds that we collect in that, can that be used for this?
No, that's for the rehab.
That's just for the maintenance?
That's for rehabilitation.
Rehabilitation only?
Yes.
Okay, because that's what we said when we went out.
Well, that's all it can be used for.
Okay.
That's what it was established for, was to rehabilitation, preservation and rehabilitation.
Right, okay.
Right.
And when you, the $19.4 million is the impact fee, so it has to be used for new growth, but it has to be used in the area where the impact is?
No, no, it has to be used on the projects. We've established our area as the entire city.
Okay.
As opposed to in the old days, if you remember back when we did
yeah.
fees, we had actual individual projects.
Yeah.
And we just collect a little bit of this, a little bit of this, a little bit of this, and by the time you had spent it in 6 years, you didn't have enough money to do anything. So we went to
the whole city.
So you spent all the money and actually do something.
Okay. Okay. And I thought I heard you say the $19.4 million is inside the city and the rest is outside.
Correct.
What does that mean? All right, clarify that for me.
The amount of traffic is going to be on city roads needs
yeah.
$35 million worth of improvements. But only the percentage-wise, which is, you know, like 60% of it, is going to be generated inside the city limits. The rest of it's being generated outside the city limits, so we can't charge the people inside city limits that money. We do have a reciprocal transportation impact fee agreement with Snohomish County, where they're supposed to collect for development outside that impacts us, and we collect for development happens inside the limits that impacts them, and there's supposed to be an exchange of money there.
What do you mean supposed to be?
You just have to make sure that it gets done.
Yeah, well, yeah. That's what I'm asking. So it's not automatic when you say it's supposed to be. Have
it's
we been collecting that in the past?
There, we get some,
a little bit
every once in a while,
okay.
But most of the time they come through and their traffic engineer says, you know, the amount of traffic isn't going to impact the city more than 3 peak hour trips per day, therefore we don't owe the city any money.
And we don't have our engineers say anything?
We look at that, but that's, you know, most of them have been small developments so far.
Yeah.
It has to be, you know, the bigger developments, and really hasn't started happening out in the county, you know, basically north of us yet.
Okay. And do we get any money from, because of Highway 2, any impact money from federal or state thing that drives right through our city and is causing an impact to our city?
No.
No. Okay. Just curious. Okay, thanks.
Councilmember Scarborough.
The tax that we approved either last year or some time ago, and you put out a list of projects that would be done with that money. Is that $19.4 million?
No. That's,
where is that in this?
That's down the rehabilitation backlog.
Okay. Thank you.
So these are, to be clear, these are road improvements that are generated by new
right.
developers.
Right. These are yeah. capacity improvements.
Growth related, yeah. Growth related. Okay. All right. Any other questions on transportation plan? All right. Seeing none, we'll go ahead and move to sidewalks.
Okay.
Mr. Kralberg.
Currently, the city is required to upgrade its street crossings for pedestrians to be, comply with the American with Disabilities Act. There's approximately $3.7 million worth of ADA ramp improvements that need to be completed. If you spread that out over 10 years, that would be $375,000 per year. One thing to remember, this is all in current dollars, so depending on what the economy does up or down. And along with that, there's probably about $3 million in just general sidewalk improvements that, you know, cracked sidewalks, tree roots, offsets, and things like that, that need to be done. So that would be an additional $300,000 per year. Any questions?
Councilmember Scarborough.
Okay, the when you say sidewalks, that's everywhere in Monroe that there's a sidewalk now, has to be fixed if necessary.
For the ADA ramps?
Well, ADA ramps, the $3 million in sidewalk repairs needed.
Right.
So that is required to be done, or just the ADA is required?
ADA is required by federal law.
Yeah.
The other one is basically a risk management issue.
Okay. But everywhere in the city limits that there's a sidewalk now, that's what that's talking yes. about fixing.
Yeah. And that's not counting anything to put sidewalks where there aren't sidewalks.
Right. Okay. Thank you.
Thank you.
It's your house.
That's where we cut it back.
Is there any Have we set aside any money, or is there any revenue stream? Like, have we been paying for any improvements in the sidewalks up to now?
A little bit. We do with, well, some of the ADA ramps, like when you use the Transportation Benefit District money to fix a street, you're required to at the same time. So since that's a requirement of doing that, some of the Transportation Benefit District money will be used for doing the ADA ramps adjacent to street improvement projects. Besides that, there isn't a lot. We've got some money from, like, we've got community development block grants. Mm-hmm. And then that's, you know, when you do a project, you upgrade the ramps while you're going along that way.
Mm-hmm. Okay, thanks.
Why 10 years? Is there a legal... That's what I thought. I just want to see if there would be ADA...
And it's more realistic than dropping $3.75 million all at once.
Perfect.
Okay.
I wasn't certain with the ADA ramps if there was if there were a 10-year requirement or something.
No.
In some case law. Okay.
It's basically you basically get a pass until someone complains to the Department of Justice, and then you usually have like 4 years.
Okay. And if we were to, with the 10 years on each of these, does that catch us up, or is that just a level of investment that we should be making just to keep up with what we have? Like, what would we need to do to keep up with what we have versus get caught up, which is what I think I'm looking at?
Okay, yeah, the $375,000 a year, the $3.75 million would replace all the existing ramps with compliant ramps.
And that'll be done.
The ones that don't have ramps, and then it would be done.
Okay.
So there's really not an ongoing cost for that kind of thing. And then the sidewalk improvements or the sidewalk repairs would catch us up. And then you probably need, you know, like $100,000 a year for new things that happen.
Okay. Thank you. All right. Anything further, Council, on sidewalks? All right. Rehabilitation backlog.
Okay. Currently, we had a company come out that did our inventory of our streets to decide what needed to be done, you know, what level of degradation they were at, so what treatment would be best suited for them. And they determined there's about $10 million worth of street rehabilitation needs right today. And we're collecting about $7.5 to $8 million over the next 10 years. So, and as that goes on, more streets get worse. So I'm anticipating it'll be about, over the next 10 years, it'll probably be about a total of $20 million that we need for rehabilitation. And we're collecting $8 million, so that's another $12 million that we're not going to have to fix up streets as we go along.
Okay.
And that was just a really big number, so I didn't write it down. That's going to let the return out to be $1.2 million a year.
Okay.
I was wondering why it wasn't written down.
Yeah. And it also depends on what the council wants to have with the policy decision on what level of street condition you want. You know, because when the company that does this program is, the idea is not to make all your streets 100%, you know, all the time, because you can't do that. But, you know, what kind of level you want to have, you know, average of 70%, an average of 50%, you know, life, you know, condition, things like that, or you want an 80%, just depends on how much money you would need to spend to keep things up once you get going.
Okay. Any questions on that? Councilmember Gamble.
I'm just trying to remember, did we specify in the 20-year plan what level of service? 70?
Not for condition. Okay. Just the level of service of delay.
Right.
Right. Not for condition.
But not for condition. Okay. Thanks.
Okay. All right. Long-term road preservation and rehab.
Well, that's really answering that question. It would be $1.59 million per year once everything was perfect with both of them. It would probably cost about $1.059 million per year to keep things at a nice level, depending on how it's kind of like at the 70% level.
Councilmember Scarborough.
So basically what we're saying is we're way behind the eight ball.
Yes, because we have not been spending sufficient money for lots and lots of years.
Okay, any other questions? Councilmember Cutterback.
So Brad, I'm sorry, I missed that. The long-term road preservation rehab, is that the total of the ones up top, or is that on top of that?
You spent the $20 million to get everything up to snuff, then it would cost $1.059 million per year to keep it there.
Per year, just to... Okay, I got you. I got you. Thank you.
All right, any other questions? Okay, downtown parking.
We looked around downtown at various vacant lots or
spaces.
Not highly used lots, because some of them do have businesses on them, and came up with several different locations that we could have a downtown parking lot. And then the estimated cost is how much to purchase the property, demo what's there, and put in a paved parking lot, and then you have the cost per space depending on the size. Those are highly, wild arm waiting guesses, because we don't know how much, if somebody has it for a business, how much they want to have to get, or, buy out their business and things like that. So that's the difference there, or a big variable. And then so basically paying for it over 10 years would be about $103,000 per year for the big parking lot. And then it goes down from there depending on how much space you want to have to a downtown parking lot.
Thank you. Councilmember Scarborough.
Is there somewhere that says where these are?
No.
Well, you say, we can get these, huh?
In my head.
In your head.
Yeah.
Okay. So we need to come
back. This is wrong to keep down on the speculation of, I think my property worth more.
Oh, all right.
Okay. Any other questions on that one? All right. Municipal campus.
We've been talking about municipal campus off and on for a few years. We have a municipal campus plan that was done, how long ago was that, June?
2001.
They talked about building a building on this site in kind of a roundabout fashion so that we keep occupying this building as different phases were done. It was also included, with putting the fueling station out back and things like that, so we've been kind of working towards doing that plan. We also talked to the school district and Everett Community College, who both expressed interest in co-locating with us. So that kind of had some different iterations of what we could do. So you have four different options before you. One is to buy the Department of Social and Health Services building that's just to the south of City Hall that's currently for sale. And putting some remodeling this building and using that for the city campus. Demoing this building and rebuilding just for the city. Demoing this building and rebuilding as a joint facility for the three entities. And then also building a new facility in the North Kelsey property for just the city, and paying for that over 20 years ranges from about $285,000 per year to $3.75 million per year.
Okay. And of course, as we were going over this in staff last week, there are a number of different ways that all this could occur, which is why this is its own separate conversation. But it's important for everybody to kind of understand on a really coarse level what the different costs are associated with these. See, Councilmember Hanford and Councilmember Scarborough. Councilmember Hanford.
So that first option, purchasing the adjacent building and remodeling, is that a joint type venture, or is that...
That would just be city.
Strictly city?
Yes.
And there's no way for it to be a joint venture?
Not for the amount of room that either the school district or the Everett Community College needs / wants.
Just to be clear, so that option is keeping everything that we have currently and then purchasing that and adding that to the campus?
Correct, yeah.
And there's still not enough room?
Right. I mean, you could probably rent a little bit of the space, but they basically want a long-term space, because they both want 25,000 square feet individually, and that building is like 18,000 square feet. So,
okay. My next question was, this new facility, North Kelsey, is that would just be like, since we have land there that we already own, let's just utilize what's there.
Correct. Yes.
So I'm going to go ahead and invite Mr. Brazel to talk just a little bit more about that and Bofflin. Again, the intent tonight is not to get into a real in-depth discussion, but mm-hmm. let's talk just a little bit more because it was a very good conversation in staff. So go ahead.
Some other cities around us have done this where they either fund the project themselves or do a private public partnership and they lease the space till they own it. But the idea is if it was in the North Kelsey area, the city campus could be the upper floors and the bottom floors could be retail space that you would rent out monthly and get lease payments in on that to help fund the building. And that's what a lot of cities have done. They've done a multi-use. And, you know, we talked about that briefly when we were designing the potential campus here at City Hall. It would be out towards Main Street further where you could have a sub shop or something like that out there and still have kind of some income to help support the new building. So that was the concept. But it could be done either North Kelsey. We even talked about downtown and the older part of the community there, and it would spur some revitalization, say, off of Fremont Street. Or
Like where the existing school headquarters is, admin building.
Go ahead. Say it again about the existing school headquarters.
District office.
That was one thing that was discussed is that, and again, you know, we've talked, this is, so I just want to be clear that these are just ideas that we're
sure.
just randomly discussing.
Mm-hmm.
But one of the things that we could do is a joint facility, maybe with the school district, where the existing admin building is, and do something similar where you might have some retail or something on the bottom floor, or it just might be all office, in which case you've got more people working closer to the downtown and some synergy there. Maybe some outdoor space. I think the city of Redmond's got some outdoor space. You could hold, if you do it correctly, you can have concerts and things like that at night, like using a parking lot that employees and customers would use during the day. And then you've got the proximity to the river there, too, through the trees. So there are a series of what-ifs that occur from any one of these options.
So also to clarify, the new facility in North Kelsey City only, is there a reason there wasn't a joint option with that? Because there's just not enough room?
There's enough room just because, you know, we need four options, you know, that's enough to stimulate discussion kind of thing.
Yeah.
So
you could
lots of different combinations of things. So.
Sure.
You could basically take the demo rebuild joint facility, $30 million, and, you know, these are wild conjectures, a little bit better than a guess. You know, you're probably looking at $30 million or so to have a joint facility. You could have Everett Community College there. With the city, but you know, then you've got other questions like where does PD go? Is it up there at North Kelsey with us? We've got Public Works here. You know, the fueling station. Are those things that then follow us to North Kelsey, or do we have a split campus? So there's a whole line of questions then that you start looking at. There's also where we would own the building, and we would be the ones renting out the downstairs versus somebody else building the building, owning it. We might lease it, and then like that, we're not on the hook to find somebody to rent the downstairs. Again, just there was a lot of discussion for about 45 minutes in a meeting that I try to keep to an hour.
Sure. So I see these numbers, but if it's a joint operation, how does that affect these numbers? And, are these numbers based on us footing the bill for everything and then the school district and every community renting from us or leasing from us? Or how?
Yes, at least for the Everett Community College, it's easier for them to get lease money than capital money.
Sure.
Because basically that's a different process for getting permission from the legislature to do capital. So basically part of that money that we'd have to pay each year would be covered by their rent payments.
Mm-hmm.
So
none of that money is in.
No, this is just how much it would cost and the revenue. Where that would come from is, you know, a further discussion of where that would come from.
Okay, that's all for now.
Yeah.
Yep. Thank you. Councilmember Gamble.
That's the exact question I had was on in relation to the $30 million. I think it's answered. That would basically be the all if we were putting the whole thing. So then the three, but that, you know, that joint facility, so I got a little bit of an answer there that for the college it'd be easier for them to get lease money, so that would go towards the 3.75, you know, million a year. And then if you were to go with the third entity with the school, what's this?
Yeah, it just depends on how they can, you know,
whether it's capital or
operating.
But I understand how you presented it now. It's an all-in, and if we were to look at that, we just have to look. There's more study just on the revenue sources in order to see how we would make it work if that was a position of interest. I got it.
Yeah, and then we also kind of did this as the city doing it, and if we do a public-private partnership, can, you know, the private entity, you know, build cheaper than the city, you know, things like that, which might lower costs.
Sure.
Like that, so.
Okay. Anything further? Okay. Thank you. Councilmember Scarborough.
So for the money, you do a bond or a levy or what?
Depends on how it's structure, because you can do, you know, city finance, there's money.
We'd have to borrow the money, though. It's not something we have in the bank.
There's a whole bunch of different things that funding mechanisms or public-private partnerships about, you know, who fronts the money, who gets the money, you know, and things like that. So that would be something that has to be discussed in the future. Whether, even though if we do a bond, that would be if we were building it initially, you still have the payments to pay the bonds back.
Right.
We just sort of like leasing the building. It's just you're financing yourself.
Right, and if we built a bill on North Kelsey, the other two entities would be leasing from us. If we built it on the school district's district office piece of property, we'd have to be leasing from them. I mean, there has to be some consideration to who owns the property.
Well, who owns the property?
And the value of it.
So
it could be that their property contributes to the cost of their lease because we're using their property.
And is the piece of property at the district office big enough for this endeavor, or do you need to go to North Kelsey to do it right?
No, actually, because the PUD is moving too. So basically, you know, depending on how much redevelopment you want to do downtown, is you take the school district and the PUD property.
I see.
And do something with that.
Okay.
And it also depends on how high you go.
How high can you go?
50 feet right now downtown.
Okay. Thanks.
Okay, so you all can see how this is its own topic discussion.
One more question.
Mm-hmm.
I'm sorry, one more question. You currently speak of fueling station. Do you have above ground or below ground fueling?
Above ground.
Okay, and is that what you'd keep?
Depends where you go.
Okay.
Although for permitting purposes, it's much nicer to have above ground than below ground.
It's much easier to understand, yeah.
It depends on where you're at for what you want to look at.
So to have an above ground fueling station in North Kelsey probably wouldn't be real appropriate to the public?
Yeah, it just depends on where it is on your piece of property and how you can screen it. You know, you plant a bunch of trees around it so you don't notice it, or
right,
you want to run around it.
I ask the questions because I've been through it with the school district,
okay.
So I understand some of the concerns with the two and how we wished we had an above ground system like Snohomish instead of what we had in the ground at the bus barn.
Yeah.
So.
Okay. So again, there's a lot that can be talked about there. The reason why we're doing all of this together is so that the council can look at sort of all the different things that we've talked about on staff, that we've heard from you, and so on and so forth. And we'll then talk about revenues, and like that we can get an idea that if we were to do this, this, and this, but not that and that, this is what the cost would be. And we will have more conversation about municipal campus and many of these other items that we've gone through. All right, so let's go on to Fryland Boulevard Illumination.
Okay. One thing that we quite frequently get asked about is why is there not streetlights all along Fryland Boulevard and the trail? So just to put streetlights all along Fryland Boulevard is about $1.2 million, and if you spread that out over 10 years, that'd be $150,000 a year. If you wanted to put lights also around the trail, it's far away from Bradley's Boulevard when it's on the west side of the lake, that would be additional money also. And then same thing with the sidewalks on the east side of Fryland's Boulevard. There's quite often requests for why aren't there sidewalks on the east side, and so that would be about $375,000 to fill in the gaps where that is, and that's about $85,000 a year for over 5 years.
Okay. And, you know, one of the things just to recognize, I think, is there are times where there have been times in our past where we haven't had frontage improvements done, like along Freilands Boulevard, and because of the decisions and the regulations that we had back in the 90s, we then, as our city grows, have to make the decision as a council as to whether or not we're going to pay for it out of general funds, find grant funds, and so on and so forth. So I just want to point that out, as we do have applications that will come in from time to time. This is just a number to remember, that if we don't get the frontage improvements, the infrastructure with projects, that this is something that a future council could end up looking at, in this case 20 years later. Councilmember Cutaback.
Brad, the Freilands Boulevard sidewalk, it would seem like that's a high need for the school there, and it being a walking school, and, you know, so how likely is it to get a grant? I mean, we got a grant for 179th. How likely is it that we could get a grant for that?
It depends, because, you know, when it was done, the thinking was that the internal houses would walk the internal streets up to 154th and then cross the signal to go to the school, not immediately go out to Freilands Boulevard and then walk up Freilands Boulevard. So that's why they were required to do the sidewalks when on Freilands Boulevard, and then there was also the trail on the east-west side. So that was the thinking back then, that there wasn't a need for sidewalks on the east side of Freilands Boulevard, because they walk internally up to the major crossing points and then cross. So it just depends on what scoring criteria the granting agencies have on whether or not how close the sidewalk is for things like that. Because, like, community development block grants will not pay for a sidewalk if there's already a sidewalk on one side of the street.
Okay.
They won't give you money if they say that's close enough,
that's enough
for their funding. However, Transportation Improvement Board is doing the Main Street sidewalk, that we're doing this summer. Because there's a gap, you meet their criteria, you get the money, it doesn't matter if there's already one on the other side of the street. So it just depends on who has money available and how you score against the other applicants.
Interesting, because the business parks on that side, and just, you know, for safety, Freilands is going 35 miles an hour there. We've got the Wakeforth Park on the other side. It would just seem like, you know, that would be a high priority to have sidewalks on both sides, just for safety, for connecting. And I know that we're doing that railroad crossing up by McDonald's now. And they'll be spent, is that a sidewalk over the railroad crossing?
Yeah.
Because that's where people walk. And I've seen people walk on kind of the grassy little trail that they've made on Freilands on the other side also. Okay. Thanks, Brad.
Anything further? Park plan. Mr. Farrell.
In our newly adopted park plan, there's both a 20-year list of projects that leads up to about $30 million, but then there's the 6-year park CIP list of projects. And that contains $3.7 million in parks improvements needed to maintain the adopted level of service in the plan. And that includes some acquisition, master planning, renovations, park renovations, and trails. $2.5 million is anticipated to be collected through City of Monroe Parks impact fees and from REIT. The remaining $1.2 million, or that will come out to roughly $200,000 a year, would have to come from other sources such as general fund, grants, and or a bond. So, and that's pretty much the same strategy that we had in our last park plan as well. So the solid fees were basically park impact fees and REIT, and then could be supplemented by any grants that we write and that we were able to achieve. And that's been that. Now, the park plan is required to be updated every 6 years through the Recreation Conservation Office of the state, so that in order to be allowed to apply for state grants. So this will be, again, 6 years from now, updated again. And that's how the parks CIP works.
Does anybody have any questions about the parks? Councilmember Cutaback.
So Centennial Trail is not anywhere in that, is it?
There are some small pieces of it.
Okay, is that included in the 3.7 million? Okay, so that is included in there.
Not all of it. The most of it, is, or the rest of it, is in the 20 years of projects.
Okay. And is anything in there for Cadman in the 6 year CIP?
Just the master planning work.
Okay. Thanks.
Thank you. Anything further? All right. Next item is non-utility operations and maintenance. Mr. Feilberg, transportation infrastructure.
Thank you. If you look at the pile of materials in front of you, should be the bottom white piece of paper, is those two items plus all the operations and maintenance kind of position that we did on the 26th of January. So you have everything on one sheet of paper, so you can not look at things in isolation. The transportation infrastructure, we basically have 118 lane miles of streets in the city of Monroe, and as a rule of thumb, we use about $1.50 per foot per year, or $941,000 per year for operations and maintenance, and that does not include the preservation and rehabilitation activities that were up above, which was the $1.059 million. We're currently funding that at $606,000 per year, leaving it a deficit of $335,000 annually. So to put all that together, basically it's $2 million a year would be needed for the first class road and street transportation infrastructure, maintenance, preservation, and rehabilitation program.
Okay, any questions? All right, parks.
Thank you. So this is an answer to the question that came up last time about what would the M&O supplies and other costs be for parks. We talked about a parks full-time maintenance position, and we talked about some added seasonal positions, and talked about the reduction in not only staffing, but it was also the M&O, so like reducing irrigation, fertilization, that sort of stuff. So approximately $37,000 annually would be needed for supplies, repairs, replacements for the park system, now included in the areas of turf care, athletic fields, playgrounds, trees, trail repairs, irrigation repairs, hazard safety supplies, to bring the level of service up to pre-recession level, and also to account for new added maintenance responsibilities.
All right, are there any questions?
I'm glad we finally have a low number. Sorry for speaking out of turn.
It's okay. Are there any other comments or questions, Council? All right, Councilmember Scarborough.
Okay, Brad, these three.
This we'll come back to.
We'll come back to both of these.
Yes, we'll come back to both of those during department reports. As a preview, since everybody seems to be a lot of you seem to be looking at pictures, since we were talking about campus plan.
I thought that's what you were
doing. Yeah, okay. So we had a, you've got this. We'll talk a little bit more about this at the end of the meeting, but since we were talking campus plan, you'll see that hallway is really nice and shiny. That's actually carpet. Over the weekend, we had a hot water tank, a boiler break.
Hot water tank break.
We had water going up about 3 inches or more in most of the Walzer building. And be happy, we could probably take anybody that's interested in a walk over there after the meeting if you want to see it, but about half the building has been damaged, and we're in the process of trying to resolve that. So anyway, that we'll talk more about that at the end of the meeting, and since you were looking at it, I'll just explain that briefly. Councilmember Cutterback.
That would be covered under insurance.
Yeah. There's a $5,000 deductible.
Yeah.
We'll come back to that.
Yeah.
Just a question on Steve, Mike, that you put on that sheet. We were just looking at the non-utility operations and maintenance. You put the park revenues.
Oh yeah.
Yeah. So I. Okay. You're going to talk about that.
Yep.
Go ahead.
Okay. So parks revenues. I just gave a couple of snapshots. Again, kind of some extra feedback. Your request. Some parks revenues, general fund from rentals, programs, and events. Because I made a point about how things had increased in the parks over the years since the recession. So in 2008, we collected $36,171 in parks revenues. And then last year, the number is $77,740. And so that difference, some of that is the local lodging funds that we receive for new events. Tribe of Rose included that figure in there, and the Wayport tour. Also, since 2008, we've added special events permits, just with the number of special events. We have a special event permit process and fees. And also included in that figure would be any rent that we collected from H3O as well. So that's really, I guess, the gist of why, obviously it's grown through the years, but also there's these other elements that happen to it. And then in the second piece there, economic impact estimate for Monroe area events. These are figures over, I did 2014 and 2015. These are for Monroe area events that were tracked by the Snohomish County Tourism Bureau. And that does not mean it's all Monroe area events, it's just the ones that they track, like Tribe Monroe, Wayport Tour, a lot of tournaments, athletic tournaments that have been occurring in the park. So in 2014, the economic impact estimate is $2,782,772, and I put in parentheses, includes the Pro Wayport Tour event, because then in 2015, you'll notice it's $1,275,329, and that's no Pro Wayport Tour. The economic impact of the Pro Tour event, these were all kind of pieces that were all totaled up. That's about right. So they are coming back this year, so we can probably expect something closer to 2014 area economic impact of about $2.8 million.
Okay, any questions? Councilmember Cutterback.
So Mike, in the park revenues, what would you say the percentage of increase in the rentals has been since 2008? You have a number, like?
Well, it's right there. It looks, it's almost what, 45%, something like that.
Not all that's rentals, right? Some of it's
rentals, programs, events. But no, I didn't break out. You're talking about strictly rentals.
And then the economic impact. I would assume the fairgrounds events are in there also, or no?
No, okay. And that would add another more than $1 million.
Okay, so when you're saying Monroe area events, you're talking about events that the Park and Rec has helped facilitate, put on in the area. That's what you're talking about when you say Monroe area events, not just anything that's happened in there, just what's happened with Park and Rec.
Yeah, I didn't bring with me the break.
Oh, that's okay. I just want to make sure I understand what the...
It's from our part of the of the county, as far as like state tournaments, the Triple Crown tournament, we have several sites, so it's including the portion of it from our area. So
okay.
Yeah, I use that terminology from the Snohomish County Tourism Bureau's report to us.
Yeah. Okay. Thanks.
Councilmember Rasmussen.
Thank you, Mike's. For those that maybe listen and don't know, can you give us just a general idea on how Snohomish County Tourism comes to these numbers as far as when they track those? Or
certainly, yeah. It's a established formula that a lot of tourism agencies utilize. So they have in the formula that they'll know, like say, let's say it's youth soccer. So youth soccer tournament, that there's going to be this is the participation rate as far as. Like families, like how many people typically attend these, and like youth baseball tournaments, there's like another figure. But then part of the formula also includes the actual tracking of overnight lodging. So some of the tournaments, the all our hotels get filled up, so then they're also in other hotels, and so the Tourism Bureau, they track all the hotels. So, you know, they work with the event organizer to get that information.
Okay. Thank you.
Anything further? Okay. So we're going to go ahead and go into major revenue sources. So we've talked about the capital costs, the O&M / operating costs. Councilmember Hanford.
I'm sorry. Before we went on, I had one more thought. I just wanted to, while we're going on all the negative side of things. Just throwing out 2 cents as we contemplate the going back to the campus idea and the joint idea. I know that as a new family coming into Monroe, one of the first things you do, you're going to go to the Monroe School District office and sign up your kids for classes for school. So that's the first place they're going, is the current offices. Then they may come here and, you know, figure out utilities and things like that. I would just say that whatever we can do to make it so that when new people are going to come to Monroe, they come into a first-class type facility to sign up their kids for school, and that sets a precedent for, wow, this is a good city. And so, knowing the current state of things, I would hope that would spur us to somehow work together with them in some kind of a joint capacity, because I think it not only behooves and makes it better for our city government, it's going to make it better for the city citizens that are coming into our city. So just want to throw that out there so that it's on the record and we are thinking about that as we keep going. Thank you.
Thank you. Councilmember Scarborough.
One of the things I think you're saying, Kevin, is you never get a second chance to make a first impression. And I know I've heard a lot about the school district's district office being less than it could be. The only thing I would advise is that when Snohomish built theirs, they took a lot of heat because of the amount of money it took to build that facility. So I agree with you that that's a good way to go, but we will have to get the community on board with the same thought process, or we'll pass one levy and never again, or at least not for many years, because that's what happened in Snohomish. But it's a good thought.
Okay. Thank you. Anything further? Thank you. So we're going to go ahead and now and talk through just different revenue sources we have, and, you know, recognizing that as council would be contemplating doing some of these increases in level of service, that it would increase expenditures. Of course, part of the equation is looking at what expenditures you can cut that currently exist, and the other side of the equation is looking at what revenues that council could consider to fund those level of services. So without getting into high detail on the pros and cons of each one of those right now, we're going to go through the different revenues. It would then be logical for us to, at a next meeting, to go through what council's priorities are for each one of these things we've talked about, and then for us to figure out what that means in terms of revenues to meet those desired priorities, so that we kind of come to an idea of what sort of package for a budget council would like to look for in 2017, and also to do some strategic long-term planning out to the five-year or so horizon. So, Ms. Nelson, should you go ahead?
Okay, if you look at the sheet that says major revenue sources, it's color-coded. The revenues that are in the green block, those are less least restricted funding revenue sources. Those are revenues that can be used for any governmental purpose. We generally use them for operations. They can also be used for capital. As long as it's a government-related activity, that's the criteria for spending the money from the green sources. The blue are also operational, but they are restricted to public safety activities.
Point of order, Mayor.
Thank you. Councilmember Hanford.
I'm sorry to interrupt. Could you, the coloring is really off. Could you describe which ones are green and blue?
I'm sorry, yeah. It's, I didn't realize it didn't translate. Oh, yeah, it does.
It's kind of gray.
Yeah, okay.
Just so we know what you're talking about. Sorry.
From property taxes, sales taxes, utility, PUD, admissions tax, and the bonds. Those are all the green ones. Those are the least restricted.
Okay.
The sales tax from the county, public safety sales tax, the liquor excise tax, and liquor profits, that money we have to spend on public safety, police, because liquor, they figure, the state says that alcohol sales create public safety issues, so the money we get from it has to be spent on public safety. Underneath liquor profits, then you have, it's on my sheet it's violet, but probably gray. You have the TBD money, your REIT funds, park, your impact fees, and a lending program from the state. Those are all our options for money for capital purposes. And then the bottom three are utility-related money. It cannot be spent on governmental things. It can only be spent on utility. And utilities are self-supporting. They're considered an enterprise. And so the idea is utilities and government funds don't mix. Yeah. So starting
just a second. I'm sorry, Ms. Dawson. Councilmember Hanford still has the floor.
I'm sorry.
Oh, I'm not. That's all I was going to say was could okay. You go through the, each one at the top, but go for it.
Okay. Do you want your button still pushed?
No.
For later? Okay. No. And before we go on, because Councilmember Camp had already pushed his, go ahead.
I wanted to wait until she's finished.
Okay. Perfect. All right. Councilmember Nelson. Ms. Nelson.
Okay. At the very top, the top three are property taxes. The first one is the $2 million. Property taxes are considered your most stable revenue stream because of foreclosure rights and the way that they're collected and everything. They're pretty much guaranteed. We collect at least 98-99% of our property tax levy every year. So it's not something that we can go, whoops, we're not getting our property tax money this year. It's a considered your safest revenue source that you can count on. We get $2 million a year. Right now it all goes 100% into the general fund to fund operations. Some cities I work for have a policy where they divert a portion to the street fund. If you decided to do that, that would mean a cut to the general fund, because right now we're spending all of it on general fund operations. So I just want to make you aware of that. But anyway, property tax can be spent on anything. We do have some banked capacity property tax of $1.1 million, and that's just money sitting in a bank or potential money.
Mayor? I'm sorry to interrupt.
Yes, Councilmember,
we've reached the point where I want the question. I have the question.
Yeah.
One time money that can be used incrementally.
Yeah, okay.
I'm confused by that. If you could explain it.
Because the city doesn't raise their property tax to the max that they can every year, what doesn't get raised gets put into a bank.
Okay.
That you can go back and tap at any time. And so that's what we've accumulated in our bank. So council had a special project or something that they wanted to fund. And like if they said, oh, we need an extra $100,000 or we need an extra $50,000 or we need an extra $200,000, it any year when you're levying your property tax, you can add that on to the property tax levy without a vote to the public. It's at your discretion. It's just sitting there. The only thing limiting you is the statutory tax rate. So you could not levy the entire $1.1 million in 1 year, okay. I wouldn't recommend it, but because of the statutory tax rate max cap. And so it's any time you can raise property taxes by any amount that's less than $1.1 million. And you can generate that money for 1 year. A lot of times, and then in your calculation, a lot of times, each year the amount you're allowed to levy is based on the previous year's levy, and you can, you're allowed to increase it by 1%. If you 1 year used, say, 200,000 of your bank capacity, the next year when you go to levy, you wouldn't be levying that 200,000 again, but your new levy would be based on the previous years that included that 200,000. So
to be clear, Councilmember Camp still has the floor, but just to clarify, if I understand what you're saying, mm-hmm. when you say one time, it means that you can go back in time. This isn't real money. The $1.1 million is not real money. It's money that the council has not used in the past by doing the 1% increase. The council is able to go back. The council is able to take, for example, the $200,000 of bank capacity you're referring to, but that $200,000 wouldn't just be for 2017, but it would still be there in 2018, 2019. It becomes part of
the new base for your
right.
Next
it becomes so. What you're doing is you've got your property tax like this, a fairly straight line, and what you're doing is instead of increasing the slope of the line, is you're increasing the line like this. Does that make sense? You're taking the $200,000, you're adding it in 2017, which means that you've got that $200,000 goes forward into you keep it. It's not a one time.
It's council's discretion to decide which way they want to go. They can keep it or not.
But that $200,000 doesn't count against every year, and the you don't go $200,000 this year, $200,000 next year, and now you've gone from $1.1 million to minus $200,000.
No.
It shifts your revenue.
Your $1.1 million would only go down to $200,000.
Correct.
Yeah.
Okay. Did that make sense?
Your capacity to tax.
Okay.
Can I write on the
yes,
board?
Go for it, yes.
Do we have markers?
Yes. For the recording, Ms. Nelson will now approach the board and draw pictures.
Okay, I have really bad handwriting, so I apologize in advance.
This is the first time. I'm looking forward to it. I've not seen the whiteboard used yet, so.
We'll see if your stick figures look good.
It's not a permanent marker, is it?
Yes.
Oh, yeah, make sure it's not permanent marker. I did that with one of my bosses on his first day.
Drawing grease marker.
It's still up.
All right, Mrs. Nelson right here.
Yeah.
Okay, here's your $2 million levy that you're allowed to do right now. Over here you have $1.1 million of bank capacity. So this is 2016's levy. 2017 you're gonna wanna add $200,000 to it, so it's gonna be $2.2 million. And so you're gonna take $200,000 away from here. So what does that give you? $900,000? I can't do math in my head.
Yes.
So
it's a finance director.
$900,000, not $900,000.
Okay, so the next year, 2018, you have your option is when you do your levy, you can add your 1%, you can go back to your old $2 million and add 1%, or you can, from here on out, go 1% added to the $2.2 million. If you add the 1% to the $2.2 million for your 2018 levy, you're not affecting your bank capacity. However, if you say, oh, we want another $200,000 and we're going to now make it $2.4 million, then you are going to take $2 million from your bank capacity.
$200,000.
Yeah,
we understand.
I'm sorry.
It's a big K. So to clarify then, the council would not need to take the 1%. You could just go from $2 million to 2017, $2.2, to 2018, $2.2, to 2019 2.2, right?
Oh, yeah.
Right. And what you'd have left over...
If you did that, you would not be affecting your bank capacity.
And, in fact, your bank capacity would grow by a marginal amount because you're not taking the 1% in subsequent years.
So is that the incremental aspect of it that you were talking about? One-time money that could be used incrementally for any government related?
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah, you can take chunks of it.
Okay. Excellent. Thank you.
Before we go on, staff, do you have any comments on that? I just want to make... Okay. And Councilmember Camp, you still have the floor?
I've done. That answered my question.
Okay. And I lost track of who was hitting their lights. I know that Councilmember Scarborough is next. Councilmember Scarborough.
So it's not a rainy day fund, or is it?
No.
No, it's just taxing capacity that has not been utilized in the past.
Okay.
You're bringing it up.
Anything further? Okay, Councilmember Cutaback.
That's okay, go ahead.
So if we took the $200,000 out of the bank capacity, does that $200,000 just come from everybody's property tax? We just raise it, whatever that equals?
It will raise the rate, yeah.
Okay, so I just want to make sure.
Yes. Councilmember Hanford.
So is there a reason or an advantage to having the bank capacity higher and higher?
No. Because there's a cap. The rate can only go up to like 360 for assessed thousand. So it comes a point where you could never access it. It would just keep growing. A lot of cities do not have any bank capacity.
In other words, they just always raise the...
Mm-hmm. The majority of cities.
Every year.
Yeah.
They raise it by 1%.
Yeah. Yeah. We're one of the...
Without a vote necessary, just...
Yeah, this is all council action, yeah.
Yeah.
And Ms. Nelson has done. Go ahead and keep your line. Ms. Nelson has done an analysis of what other jurisdictions have in terms of their what do you call them, like blended tax rates or something per capita. And she'll go ahead and share that at a later date. I don't think it's in this material here, but it'll demonstrate that there are some jurisdictions that the sales tax is at its highest. There's some where the property tax is fully. You know, they don't have banked capacity and they can't do the 1%. They can't do more than the 1% per year. There's some that do both, and we'll bring those forward so that you can take a look at them at a future meeting. Mr. Brazel, and then we'll go back to council.
Okay, I was just going to mention what this council decided to do is to cut some maintenance in the past because we had the recession. So I think it was 6 years ago was the last time we took the 1%, and some of that 1% went to street maintenance. I mean, I remember at one point in time we were putting $200,000 a year into doing overlays, and it's been years since we did that. That's why we had the list that we went over earlier to try and get back on board doing some of those things that eventually you'll have to put money into, like the roads and the streets, that type of thing. So anyway, that's where that list is based off of, is part of not collecting the 1% each year or making a big increase.
Okay.
Do I still have the floor?
Yes, you do.
Okay. So the regular levy at $2 million, that's the money that we're already receiving.
Yeah.
That's why it's listed in the first thing.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Everything else?
Yeah, the bank capacity we're not touching right now. We have not touched.
Okay.
Yeah. And then right underneath that is voted excess levy. You can go to the voters at any time for any reason and say, do you want to raise your taxes? And it can be any amount. Voters have the ability to turn over their entire paycheck to us if they need that. But, okay, it's a finance director's dream. You can go to the voters at any time and ask them for any purpose. You can say you want money for general governmental purposes. I doubt the voters would vote for that. But if you say we want it for this specific thing, there's certain things voters will vote for. When I worked at the city of Redmond, they needed a new building. because they had outgrown their building, so they went to the voters and asked for an excess levy. But they knew that there were only certain things that voters would vote for, so they said, okay, the new building will be the police, we'll do a police building and a senior center. And the voters said, yeah. It so happened they moved the finance department into the police building, but along with the police, you have to do what the voters say. But there's different things you can do. It's unlimited, the amount of, in the cap, the statutory cap on the property tax does not apply to things that are voted by the voters. The voters can override all statutory caps on property tax. So it depends on what the will of the people is. If you feel like they understand the needs, then that's always an option. And it's, if you get the voters to agree to it, that's a good safe option because you've got the community back.
And before we move on, and that's voted in excess of the levy, that's more than the 1%.
Absolutely, yes.
Has the ability to do up to the 1%. So, Councilmember Hanford, you still have the floor. Did you have anything else before we move on? Because I've got two other lights, too.
Nope. No, thank you.
Okay. Councilmember Gamble and then Councilmember Cutaback.
I think most of the questions got answered. One I had was,
okay,
was remembering when was the last time we did any sort of, you know, the 1%, or I mean, it's up to 1%. So was it 6 years ago, Gene? Is that what I'm hearing? And was it the full 1%?
I believe it was.
Yeah, we did 1% in 2010. Well, it was levied in 2009.
Okay. And the bank capacity that we've accumulated, how much is it per year that we accumulate when you're not levying any sort of increase?
It's roughly 20,000 per year, but it compounds because your levy is always based on the previous year's levy.
Okay. So then we had some bank capacity before 2010.
Yes. The city has quite a bit of bank capacity from the time that they split the fire department, annexed the fire department to the county.
Okay.
That's when they suddenly all the they kept the bank capacity, but they weren't levying it anymore because they no longer had to support a fire department. So they, at that time, they said, okay, we're not going to levy the same amount since we're no longer paying for a fire department. So they put it in the
Okay. So the last time we did an increase was 2010. What was the I mean, was there a stretch before 2010? I mean, we were doing it every year until 2010?
Yeah.
So every year until 2010?
Yeah, most cities do their percentage.
No, I got that. The and then the last time we used any sort of bank capacity?
I don't think, yeah.
Okay. Never
used any bank capacity. All right.
Yeah, because when the city, excuse me, pardon me, when the city did annex the fire department over, I think they made the promise to the voters that they would not use that extra capacity for a limited amount of time or something.
Do we know what that time was?
It's okay.
Well, if we could, it's not written down?
Yeah.
Or if we could find out, or how would we resolve? She's cheap.
Like
as bad as the finance director that wants everybody to turn their check over. Just kidding. Kidding. So we don't, there was no way to find that out.
Yeah, it was not an official policy. It was just,
And what year was that?
Way long time ago.
Yeah. Brad would know.
I was on council roughly 06, 05.
Yeah.
Yeah, and I think that we were given the option, the council was given the option at the time to be able to continue collecting those funds, and the decision was made, no, we don't need to do that right now. So.
Okay.
The economy was in better shape at that point in time, and I think we were able to basically give people a break, you know. So that's what I'm loosely remembering. It's 10 years old, and I'd have to think about it more, but I think it was just a decision. I remember sitting in Councilmember Cutaback's chair over there, and we had decided that we weren't going to go back and use, we weren't going to use those funds. And
okay. use the bank capacity, those when you see those funds?
Yeah, well, we weren't going to use the funds that then ended up contributing even more to the existing bank capacity that you have today.
Okay.
Yeah, because remember, there was already banked capacity, is what Ms. Nelson was pointing out, and by not, as I'm understanding it, by not continuing to collect for the fire district, we would have added to the banked capacity. But again, I'd need to think about that more. What Ms. Nelson was mentioning, Mr. Feilberg, is reminding me of that about 10 years ago. I'd have to think about that. Yeah. Okay. So yeah, staff will do what we can to get some more pieces of the puzzle back
just
together.
The history side of things, and then you know, I think what would be good for you know for council too is that I know we've talked about it too. You know, hey, what is you know when you're looking at oh, hey, if we did 2.2, you know, what does that mean? You know, what is the average cost per house?
Oh, yeah, I can calculate that out
right.
easily. Yeah.
So because that, I mean, that's important. You know, as we look at some of this.
I already have a worksheet that shows 100,000.
She has. I know we've yeah. seen it before, but that information would be useful as we're looking at the whole picture.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Okay. Yeah, what we would be doing is we'd go through, talk about the priorities. We would then normalize these costs all the way down to, for sales tax, to the best we could, you know, per capita, you know, per household or something like that. And we'd normalize the property taxes also per, you know, average, you know, per 100,000 or something like that.
Okay. That is for future discussion. Okay, thanks.
Yes, sir. All right, Councilmember Cutterback.
Yeah, Dan, I was going to say that you've done a nice job over the last few years of showing us what the impact would be on a household, and it's pretty nominal, that 1%. I think
spreading it out.
And then, I mean, it's just over time because, as you said, it's the 1% each year, and you're increasing 1% from the previous year, that over time you see an impact. 10 years it might be. You know, so I think that's what we need to kind of look at in the future. And I know we have not done a 1% since I've been on council. So
yeah, every 5 years it's about 100,000.
Yeah.
So
yeah. Question just about we were talking about, and this kind of goes back a little bit, so I apologize, but the our city building, what do you call it, campus. Would we be able to use some of like utility capital fees and billing because we charge the billing, the admin part, so in funding something like that we could look at. I'm looking at these funding sources at the bottom of the page and it's restricted to any utility related.
If the buildings housed utility employees like public works,
right.
operations and things like that, you can
use a portion of utility funding
to
help pay for the building. You know, same with admin when they take in billing, it would seem that a portion could be
correct.
Paid out of that whole utility.
Another option for like a municipal plan is. I'm jumping ahead, but since we're talking about it, is the REIT 1 money that can be used for any municipal capital project. REIT 2 money is restricted to capital projects for public parks and streets. However, parks and public works, I mean, but REIT 1 can be used for any governmental capital project. So if you could pay your debt service on a capital project out of REIT 1.
So
we're using that money right now for our capital fund, so you would be taking away from that. But
when you say restricted any capital, I read how I read the REIT 2 is restricted to any parks or capital project that is in the comp plan. Is the campus plan in our comp plan?
No.
Okay.
Not to the details that I think we're talking about.
Okay, so the campus plan is not in there because you would think that parks and public work would be housed out of in the new campus plan and
may want to put it in the comp plan.
Yeah, so that might be something to think about is whether you know that gets put in there.
Would you yield for a question?
Yeah.
You said the REIT 2 is restricted to any parks or streets, so that couldn't be used for a municipal campus. However, if the municipal campus had, if we made a city park next to the municipal campus, then that could be used, correct?
Yes.
Okay.
Yes.
Thanks.
Yeah. It needs to be in the comp plan. So.
When I worked at Duval to build a police station there, we did a local option, the local loan from the state, because you get really low rates for that, and then we used REIT funds. We put it in our comp plan, and we used REIT funds to pay it off in 10 years. So that's a way to go.
Councilmember Hanford and Cutterback, we're going to double check something too. It it may be that it's in the capital facilities plan, the CFP, and so we'll just verify that the campus plan is not in the CFP. I don't. Mr. Feilberg looks like he's looking for something. Yeah, he is. Anyway, Councilmember Cutterback, you still have the floor.
Just one last question, Brad. There's something from the state. It's the. Trying to remember the name of it. It's a trust.
Public Works Trust Fund?
Yes.
That was refunded.
Yes.
Well, I thought they were trying to refund that. No.
I don't think it's succeeded yet. Because they're going to education.
That was a big thing last year when we went down there, and they were adamant that they were going to refund that and get it going because it was important for cities to be able to have access to that money to do certain capital projects, and it sounded like it was, it sounds like it's worked very well in the past, so, but it still hasn't been funded, so that might be something.
We have some of those loans.
Yeah, okay. Exactly.
1% and 2% interest.
I know. Okay.
Okay. Councilmember Hanford.
Thank you. If you could check with, unless Liz knows the answer to this, I'd love to hear from Attorney Lau as we continue discussions as a council about the municipal campus options, how much of that needs to be in executive session and how much, like if all of it has to be in and out, those are questions I have as we move forward.
Okay.
Don't hear any answer right now, just throwing it out there.
Okay, thank you. All right, anything further?
Nope, I'm done.
Okay. We're going to go ahead and continue then. We are on property taxes, voted excess levy. We're now on to sales taxes.
Okay, on the sales tax, as you can see, we're projected to get $4.3 million this year. That's a nice big number, and we use it all towards operations right now. Problem with sales tax is extremely volatile. So it's extremely dependent on economic factors, both local and national. So sometimes it's up, sometimes it's down. And when it's good, it's really good. That's all I can say about it right now. We're a pretty heavily dependent city on sales tax right now.
And so,
go ahead.
So to be very clear, when you have operating expenses like labor in particular that are fairly linear, and you are using and the sales tax, which is kind of like stocks, you know, it goes up and down like this to balance the books. It means that they're in the valleys. There can be years where we have a very difficult time affording our regular operating expenses, and then there of course will be years where you're making a lot more money. And the concern is that, you know, the years where you've got a deep valley, you really need to look at reserves or contingency. The years when you've got a really big, a larger amount of money than you expect, you've got to take care to apply that money to first refund your contingency and reserves if you used it, and then you just want to make certain you're using it for one-time expenses. So, you know, that it's just something to be aware of, that we're very dependent upon sales tax here. That's a less stable revenue source than property taxes. That's the only thing that we want folks to understand. There's, you know, good points, and then that's the one caution. I didn't mean to interrupt you, Ms. Nelson.
No, I think it's a great point. After that comes utility taxes. These are taxes on all utilities that are in the city. We tax water at 10%. We tax electricity, cable, natural gas, phones, we tax all of those at 6%. And as those utilities grow and as their rates go up over time because costs go up, so the tax, it's a tax on their gross. So it's a built-in increase. It increases as well as their rates go up. So it's a pretty pretty stable revenue source. Maybe not necessarily fair one, but it works for government. Property tax, sales tax, and utility taxes are the three biggies that most Washington cities rely on. After that are some smaller ones, PUD privilege tax that goes to operations, and sales tax mitigation from the state. That's from when they changed the sales tax to destination rather than source. And the impact to us, they have determined, is $133,000 a year. Eventually, I think that's going to go away. So far, they've been able to, I think AWC really fights for that. They've been able to keep that. And admissions tax is pretty steady. It's $135,000. That's mainly from the Galaxy Theater. A little bit from other people, but mainly the Galaxy Theater. After that, you have options of general obligation bonds. And these are great sources for revenue, but the downside is you got to figure out a way to pay the debt service on them. You have the authority as council to issue up to $20 million in bonds, general obligation bonds, where you're just pledging the city's taxing authority to the bonds, and you can do that without a vote of the people. If you go to the people and ask for a vote on bonds, you can go up to $36 million, thank you.
It's okay.
But if you, the flip side is, how are you going to make the debt service payments on the bonds? You can take it out of any of these green items here, or something else if you can think of it.
Councilmember Kemp.
Thank you. We have GO bonds now, right? Or GO
the off. North Chelsea bonds.
That's the only one we've got?
Yeah, that's it.
Okay. Thank you.
Councilmember Cutback.
And you talked about the sales tax mitigation from the state, and right now it's on destination, but didn't we lose money when it went to destination from source because of all
that? Yeah, and that's what the 133 is for the amount that they felt we lost.
Okay. Oh, so they're mitigating that and giving it back. I gotcha.
Yeah. When the state changed the rules on how sales tax is done to destination-based, they figured out how much each jurisdiction would lose.
Yes.
And those loser jurisdictions, they've been giving mitigation money to each year. We're one of them.
And does it stay constant? That just...
It's a real convoluted formula that they do.
Okay.
And it's lately been under a lot of, the last few years, it's been under a lot of scrutiny since the state is strapped for cash. And so, so far, because I think cities have screamed loud enough that they haven't touched it, but each year they try to take it away.
Councilmember Cutback, when I was on council, I'm pretty certain the number was about $250,000 that we lost. And I think they've been weaning us off of this. The theory is they're weaning us off of what they took from us over the last few years.
Yeah, because you would think when the economy is good and we have more businesses in manufacturing, that number should actually be increasing, that they should give us back.
Right. The cabinets that are made here, that are sold here.
Yeah, sold. But I mean, all the Fryland businesses, that stuff moves out of our community, and is we don't get, you know, and the 133, I don't know, in a booming economy covers that. That's all.
Yeah. No.
Thank you.
Thank you. Councilmember Hanford.
Thanks. If you could just, I don't know if you're done with green or before you move on to the other, can you just describe how the voter excess levy works? Like, do we determine the time frame and the amount, and how does that?
Sky's the limit on what you want to do. You can do it by a percentage, you can do it by a dollar amount, and you can say it's forever, you can say it's for 5 years, 10 years, 2 years. It's you can set whatever parameters that you think the voters will agree to, and then the voters can say yay or nay.
Okay.
And it's how much, it's additional tax on the property tax. It's increasing the property tax.
Thank you.
Thank you. All right, go ahead and continue.
Oh, okay. The next four are sales tax and liquor tax, and that's money that comes in and we put it towards the police operations. It doesn't pay for all of our police operations. Their budget's like $6 million, but it helps. It helps mitigate, you know, and it's dedicated. After that are our capital. You've got the traffic benefit district, the TBD sales tax, and I think Brad addressed that earlier, what that's restricted to. You have your REIT one that we just talked about, any capital project. In that, we get the REIT tax whenever property's bought and sold, whenever it changes hands. And so half of it goes into REIT one, half of it goes into REIT two. REIT one, any governmental capital project. REIT two, streets and parks only. And so, and on both of these, if it's to pay the debt service of a capital project, that is a legitimate use of the REIT money. Impact fees, those are restricted to growth-related. And one time it was explained to me that paving a road is maintenance, adding a lane to a road is growth-related. So anything that's adding capacity.
Fan.
Yeah.
Councilmember Cutterback.
Those have to be spent within what time frame?
6 years.
6 years?
What?
It's 10 now?
It's 10 now.
Okay. We spend it faster than that.
Yeah.
There's also the state local option program, and that's just issuing bonds, having the state leverage their tax. They have a lot of clout with in the bond market because they're so big and they're considered so stable. So they let the smaller entities pool and they issue bonds through them at a much lower rate, and all the financing costs are folded into the interest rate. And so it's a real cheap way. It's real hard to qualify. It's a real cheap way to go into debt if a city wants to go into debt, and we can do it for real estate projects. The when I first started working here at the city, one of my first tasks was to apply for a local loan. I think it was for some equipment, and we were turned down because at the time they did not feel like we qualified. We now, I think, would qualify. And so it's something that it's considered a really elite program, and that's why you get really good interest rate. And so that's something that to keep in mind for but then again, you do have to make the debt service, but you can use REIT money for that.
Thank you. Councilmember Cutterback.
Did we look at that when we bought Kelsey instead of the GO bonds? Did we not qualify?
I have no idea. Kelsey was originally a bank loan, I think, a bank note?
It was a bank loan.
And then it was turned into...
I think it was Bank of America.
Yeah, it was. And then it was turned into GO bonds.
When we refinance, can you look at that instead of refinancing?
It would not qualify because the GO bonds that we have for the North Kelsey loan property is our taxable bonds. The local is restricted to tax-free bonds, and because North Kelsey property is not considered a municipal purpose, it's considered land speculation.
Oh, so, you said real estate project.
I'm sorry, but yeah,
municipal. But it has to be for governmental reasons, not just to buy and then resell to make retail.
Yeah.
So it's governmental purposes. Okay.
It's like a parking lot?
Parking lot would qualify.
No.
Okay. Anything further, Councilmember Cutterback?
Nope.
Ms. Nelson?
Okay, and then the last three are utilities, and I don't think they're really part of this discussion. I just threw them on because it's funny. We worry so much about the general fund, but the utilities are actually our biggest business.
Yeah.
As you can see, $16 million in revenues annually. And that's a big business. But it's stable, it's regulated, and it's no problems right now. I don't want to cheat.
All right. So that does that conclude our revenue for... Did you want to go over the notes? No, you've already done that.
Well, included, I threw this in. Gene had got this when he was down in Olympia, this AWC sheet. And I just threw it in the packet because I thought it was interesting that it talks about how we're not unique. All cities, they say the current method of funding city services is fundamentally broken. And I think you've been hearing that from us for a long time. A lot of you know that already. But it just talks about the conditions of other cities and that in Washington State we have a little problem with the tax structure and that it's eventually going to have to be addressed. And so I just thought this was some good information to have and explain the situation. And it shows how most cities rely on property sales and business utility taxes. B&O tax, some cities charge B&O tax when they get that too. And so this pie chart is very representative of us. For us, the biggest piece would be sales tax with two smaller pieces for property and utility tax.
Okay. Councilmember Hanford.
That was my question, was what is our, where do we fit in there? So about 23% is sales?
Probably about 24% is sales, and then, you know, about 19-20% property and utility.
Thanks.
Each.
Okay. Great. So we'll, when we look at the extended agenda, if it's not on there, staff and I will figure out when the next session to put this on when we don't have an attorney present. I would imagine, and I'm open to suggestions, I would imagine that what we would do next is come back to council, kind of go over the menu of things that are on here, probably try to... Yeah, so we'd go through the different things that are on there, try to get some priorities from council, figure out what those costs are, and then talk about different revenue structures to achieve those. We'll normalize those, have some comparisons and things like that, and just kind of go from there. Questions, comments? Okay. Staff, thank you very much for all the work that you've done on this. This is important for our strategic planning and also to make certain we're funding things that where we have needs. And council, thank you very much for listening and thinking through the options that we have. Okay, let's go ahead and go on now to new business, and I'm going to turn things over to Mayor Pro Tem Cuttaback for this. I'm going to ask that the city clerk note my recusal in the official minutes for the meeting for this item. The reason for my recusal is that I'm employed by the contracting party, Snohomish County. My position with the county is that of an employee, and my compensation consists entirely of a fixed salary. There is no contingent component of my compensation package pursuant to RCW 4223040, and based upon my consultation with the city attorney, I accordingly have at most a remote interest in the agreement, and I'm removing myself from chambers. And this is for new business item number one. AB
16019. Let the record show that Mayor Thomas has left the chambers. Mike?
Thank you, Mayor Clinton. City of Monroe has received notice of a Snohomish County Hotel Motel Tax Fund grant award of $9,600 for tourism-branded street banners from Monroe. We applied for the grant last summer. The grant award will be used to design, purchase, and install approximately 70 street pole banners for the historic downtown and North Kelsey shopping, lodging, and restaurant retail areas in Monroe. As part of the grant conditions, city staff will work with the Snohomish County Tourism Bureau to design guidelines for the banners that will reflect the visual integration of the Bureau's long-range tourism development and marketing strategy. In addition, city staff will invite representatives from the Monroe Chamber of Commerce and the Downtown Monroe Association to participate in the design process for the project. The branding elements of the banners will be consistent, yet individual banners will display distinct categories of tourism-related themes, not unlike the tourism-branded banners we have downtown currently. This cross-promotion marketing approach will help introduce hidden assets in our community and bring together our historic downtown, the North Kelsey shopping area, and the Evergreen State Fairgrounds as tourist destinations in Snohomish County. And so our request to action is to authorize to sign the grant agreement.
Thank you. Council? Councilmember Hanford?
I'll move to authorize Mayor Pro Tem to sign the grant agreement with Snohomish County for a hotel motel tax fund reimbursable grant award in the amount of $9,600 for tourism branded street banners, and expressly authorize further minor revisions to the extent deemed necessary or appropriate.
Second.
We have a first and a second. Any discussion? Council, vote. All those in favor?
Aye.
All those opposed? The vote is 7-0.
Isn't the vote 6?
No, I count.
You do?
I count.
Please.
Okay, thank you very much. So we're going to go ahead and move on now to council member reports. We'll go ahead and start off with the committees. City Council Legislative Affairs Committee, and I believe that was council member Camp that was late, so you're the chair.
Mm-hmm. Of course, I want to point out, council member Cutback, that yes, you do matter very much.
You.
I want to put that on the record.
Oh.
Yes, I was late, and I was elected, but I did manage to get there in time to actually see the nomination. So it was a lot of fun. Thank you, gentlemen. I appreciate it. We had a lot of discussion about the work plan for this year, and as I was looking over the notes from our city clerk, I decided I'm not going to go, I'll give you the high points. We're going to be looking at council rules. We have an issue with an elected position we have to review, and some of the council procedures and things that we face with our people who present it at the comment time. Those are the high points. We'll be looking forward to those. Mm-hmm. I think that's all.
Okay, thank you. Community Transit Board of Directors meeting, Councilmember Cutback.
Yes. So I will be forwarding council a notice that we have three representatives for a mid-sized city that are representing us on the Community Transit Board, and I am an alternate, so three alternates. They are putting together a newsletter that is particular to the mid-sized cities, so I just received that today, so I will forward it to all council members to keep you guys in the loop. I've asked to have it for this meeting. We have our board meeting the first Thursday of the month at 3, so I asked to receive the update by the Tuesday, so I just got it today, so I will forward it to you. Basically, what was decided is they have... here, let me pull it up real quick. They did the Swift College Station opening. It completes the original BRT line, which is the Bus Rapid Transit project. So you'll be seeing that. And then just announcing the new board members.
We got that.
Oh, you got this already?
Mm-hmm.
Okay. I don't have to forward it to you.
Okay.
That's it.
Sounds good.
Aren't there only two alternatives?
No, there's three. It's myself, the Linwood City Council member George Hurst, and then Mount Lake Terrace Mayor Jerry Smith.
All right, any other questions? All right, Snohomish Health District Board of Directors, Councilmember Rasmussen.
Thank you. So our meeting was actually earlier today, and I was officially sworn in. So index confirmed, and I too matter now. during the meeting, lots of highlights. We recognized Lake Stevens Council Member Sam Lowe for his services as chair in the previous 2 years, and County Councilman Ken Klein for his service as vice chair. In the news, everyone's heard about the Zika virus, and so our health officer, Gary Goldbaum, had a lengthy discussion on that, and more reassuring than anything as far as we live in an area that, you know, don't expect to see a huge problem with it, but it is definitely something to keep in mind, especially if you're going to travel outside the country or interact with someone coming from one of the affected countries. So, the health Board of Health supported moving forward with an interlocal agreement that takes the Board of the Snohomish County Health District's IT staff and services and combines them with the county IT staff and services, and so now that's just up to the county for approval on that, but it saves the health district about $135,000 a year and gives their staff and their facilities a much needed upgrade. So very excited about that. We also supported moving forward with the Ruckles House. Kind of backstory on this, and it started last year. The health board was needing to find a way to more or less bridge the financial gap. So there's three areas of revenues that the health board receives their revenues, and they basically maintain flat while expenses have gone up. And so the board last year was trying to find ways to bridge that gap, and one of the ways was the consideration of, well, let's move it to the county side. That was one option. And so they implemented a partnership with Ruckles House, which is a third party, very unbiased, I guess, or neutral, I should say, organization that does this for other communities. And so they've started to do some work into it and gave us a bit of an update from what they've done so far. And the board supported moving forward with them. And so we hope to have more detailed findings in by August 2016. And that'll help kind of gear or guide the board on which direction to move. And so we're looking at, we're hopefully going to be presented with several options to look at and to consider and go from there. I did volunteer myself to sit in on or be a part of the ad hoc committee that works with Ruckles House, and we'll evaluate some of those process, procedures, interviews, and so forth like that. So I look forward to being a part of that. We got our Board of Health retreat coming up on March 15th. Certainly have more updates on that. And we had in the standing committee's report, our Public Health Advisory Council, Mr. Wood, presented on that and gave some basic updates. But after the meeting, I did find out that we are missing representation from our youth in Snohomish County. And so, you know, I'll put that out there to you guys. If there is someone that you know under 18 that would like to be part of the Public Health Advisory Council, this could be a good opportunity for them as well. So just let me know and I can get you in contact with the right person. And then just for your guys' information, I am going to start reaching out to the other communities that serve under this position, and more or less it's going to be an introduction and trying to find out what it is that they want from me as their Board of Health rep. And I will again invite this council that if there is something that you're wanting to know more about or have looked into, please let me know, and I'd be happy to take that. So, and I will, of course, get our packet to Liz to scan in, and look, or you can just go to the website and click the link there. A little easier.
That would work. I think that would work for everybody if you just wanted to send the link to Liz, and then Liz can send that out to the council.
Okay.
Yeah, that sounds good.
That's all I have.
Okay, cool. Does anybody have any questions for the health district? Okay, thank you. Thank you both for your reports, and also thank you, Councilmember Camp, for the report on the Legislative Affairs Committee. We'll now go ahead and go around for individual reports. Councilmember Scarborough.
Nothing to report.
Okay. Thank you, Councilmember Gamble.
I know we just did the ribbon cutting here not too long ago for Elite.
Yes.
The Elite facility, and just to kind of bring up an immediate benefit for the Valley, the Sky Valley and Monroe. The Little League tryouts began this last weekend, and they are also on the 20th of February, and they're being housed in the Elite facility. It's indoors. There's enough space for all the kids to go through. We don't have to deal with kids' hands turning purple we did it out at Miracle League Field, and we always could count on that, but it would be raining, it would be cold, it was just a long, drawn-out affair, and there were tears shed and all kinds of stuff, and it was just a very nice added component for the community, and first time we've been able to, really kind of get in there and use it, so just a great asset, so if you haven't checked it out, get down there. Just a reminder of some of the new members of the community, Jen and Michael Bumpus, on that side of things, and then going up to the high school on Friday night to watch the girls play, because it was the select night, and to see the Tuiasa Sopo family there, all turned out to watch, Ashley coach, and just the excitement that was around that program. It's just nice to see. So anyway, that's it.
Nice. Thank you. Councilmember Davis.
Nothing tonight. Thank you.
Okay. Thank you. Councilmember Camp.
Thank you. Councilmembers Scarborough and I had an opportunity last night to attend the Planning Commission training, and it was very interesting. I learned a lot. They also had a couple of items that came up in our legislative committee as potential recommendations we can make to the public when they attend. I didn't get a chance to stay for the entire one, and I hope that Mayor, you could forward any thank you and appreciation to Mr. Tovar, right?
Mr. Tovar, yes.
What an excellent presentation, and well worth the time. And that's all I got. Thank you.
Thank you. Councilmember Asmussen.
Good today.
Okay. Councilmember Cutterback.
I was saddened to read in the paper about former Councilmember Jim Honeycutt and his passing. I was unaware. Jim was actively involved in this community public service, 16 years on council, served on a whole bunch of different stuff, and I believe they're having a celebration of life for him on at Cascade Community Church on February 27th at 11:30. It was announced in the paper, so Jim had a huge impact on me in the beginning of me running for office, and met with him on many occasions just to talk about public service and what it meant to serve a community, and he was a very passionate individual. Also served on my Y Facilities Committee, got him involved in the Y and his wife Dolly, and so I think he will be very missed around this community. Just had a huge impact, so I'm sorry to hear that. So,
thank you. Councilmember Hanford?
Nothing to my thanks.
Staff? Mr. Worthen?
You already mentioned the small flood we had over at Public Works. Brad's going to talk more about it. From my perspective, we turned it over to our insurance company as a $5,000 deductible. We're well over that so far.
Yeah.
It's not fixed yet. So Jake and I will be working with the adjuster to go through the place and take a look at what the permanent damage is.
Thank you. Mr. Farrell?
Thank you. Today I attended the
Chamber of Commerce's monthly luncheon, and the featured speaker was Neek Bennett, a former executive director of the Chamber. She now works with Snohomish County in her Tourism Economic Development, and she spoke about the Sky to Sound Water Trail. And just, you know, I've been attending, representing City of Monroe as part of the coalition. It's a coalition of over 28 different organizations, businesses, to create this. The Snohomish County is the lead on this coalition, and they have received a grant from the National Park Service to create this water trail system. And the water trail's mission is to develop a sustainable water trail that offers recreation opportunities and amenities to visitors and economic benefits to the many partners committed to create an exemplary water trail. And so we're this water trail, what the vision of it is, it's a network of white water and flat water trails, water trails, reaching from the Wild Sky Wilderness, which is the north and south forks of the Skykomish River, out to the Puget Sound. So we've been meeting monthly, and we're now starting to map and inventory the different portions and sections of the water trail. Public outreach will be next steps, and we'll have a one-year work plan. So there'll be some water trail events for the public, and then we'll be coming up with recommendations in the draft plan. So what this does is it creates this plan of a water trail system. It'll be one of three in the western United States to have a water trail plan. Definitely for Monroe, we have three of our parks, you know, are adjacent to the Skykomish River. There's also the Fish and Wildlife Gold Launch, Lewis Street. Definitely there are all sorts of water recreation activities that have been going on here in Monroe, so we definitely stand to benefit from the development of this water trail plan. And anyways, I was there in attendance and spoke about our parks and current, you know, water access abilities that we have here in Monroe.
Thank you. Deputy Chief Kennard?
I have nothing this evening.
Okay, thank you. Mr. Osaki?
Nothing, except that in terms of the comprehensive plan and municipal campus, the discussion of civic buildings and facilities in the comprehensive plan relies on a space study from about 1999. So there's references to the need for a municipal campus, but that really needs to be updated as part of the comprehensive plan. And so the good news is that under state law, normally you can only amend the comprehensive plan once per year. Our next formal amendment process starts in the middle of this year. It wouldn't conclude until the middle of next year. But there's an exception to that one-year amendment process for amendments to a capital facilities plan if it's done in conjunction with a budget amendment or the adoption of a budget. So should the council decide on this or any other facility that needs updating in terms of capital facilities and actual programming, it can be done outside of that annual amendment cycle.
Okay, cool.
Good.
So we can add it in this fall?
Yes.
Perfect. Thank you. Anything further?
That's it.
Okay. Ms. Osaki. I'm sorry. Ms. Nelson.
Oh, my goodness.
You too, man.
I could use some coffee now. Ms. Nelson.
I don't know.
You can throw something at me. Dare I try, Mr. Feilberg? Mrs. Feilberg?
I have three things. I really only have two because everyone's already talked about the extensive water damage at City Hall. Actually, I showed this to one of our employees and she thought we had a really good janitorial service. It was really cool. The was well. I said, no, that's perfect. So, as it says, we'll be coming back to this council for a confirming resolution, we hope, on the declaration of emergency so we can go out without having a really lengthy bid process to find somebody to help out. We've are working with ServPro to restore the building. Currently, the estimate is about $16,000. Water went up about a foot in the sheetrock. In addition to the siding curb, we decided that we didn't save the curb yet. And so the reason we need to proceed quickly as opposed to waiting to go out to the bid process, because if we just leave it kind of damp and You go over there, your glasses fog up when you walk in the building, because it's very damp in there. It was also very interesting that the only part that got wet was the part that had carpet rather than the part that had vinyl floors. So we don't want the mold to start growing, so we've got fans and dehumidifiers over there right now working on that.
Go ahead, Councilmember Gamble.
Yeah, wouldn't that be the insurance company that would be doing it and not us lining up the contractor and stuff?
No. They will pay for it, but they don't do the restoration.
They're not going to want I don't know our policy, but they're going to want to select their particular vendor or preferred.
They usually don't give us pushback on something like this. If we go out there and get it fixed, such an emergency, they'll just pay the bill. I mean, if there's longer term salute stuff, if there's finished carpentry work that has to be done or we have to replace door jams or anything like that, then they could probably give us a vendor of their choosing. But in this situation, they don't push back on it.
Okay. I'm married to an adjuster, so that's when my antennae are going up. She would be pissed not being able to inspect before.
I come from the same world, and that's kind of what I thought initially, but the way WCI works is even if one of our vehicles hits another vehicle and they want, ABC Acme auto body, they don't usually push back. They say, okay, that's fine, and then they work with that.
Who is our insurance carrier?
WCIA.
Oh, WCIA, okay. Okay, got it.
So it's a little bit different than the private sector.
Sure. No, that's that makes sense then. But yeah, I was instantly going, why are we managing?
I totally appreciate it.
Got it. Thank you.
Real quick, how many people do we have in that building when we walk through? It looked like about 15. I'm not counting the work crew that's in and out in the vinyl.
Yeah, so I mean the people who have offices, and there's 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, 9, 10, 11.
Okay. Okay, and so, just letting you know that we've got folks that are over there that we're giving them the option to come into one of our trailers if necessary, but we have equipment and we have personnel over there in the carpeted area, and it's about a dozen people, and things are tight over here, so. Okay, Mr. Fahlberg, go ahead.
The other piece of paper you have, the long skinny picture in the north direction, we were told that he was going to be coming to the council meeting tonight, so just in case you hear from him or somebody else about this. Over on, that's the bridge, 153rd and Black Horse, I forgot what the name of the cross street is, about 169th it is, we had a drainage ditch, a very, very large ditch. It was about 10 feet deep, about 30 feet wide at the top. That the person who lives to the left of this picture was busy selling his house and said, well, part of your ditch is on my property. I should have my property back. So we actually filled in the ditch last summer, put a pipe underneath it, and filled in the ditch. After we were doing that, in response to our policy that we established in 2012 about the use of city right-of-way by people that came up the drainage ditch on next to Iron Eagle golf or driving range, we were talking about people using the city's property, and they had sheds and trampolines and boats and gardens and things. We really had a hard time maintaining our property. So in response to that, we've been doing the same thing in the ditches out in Franklin's Boulevard. And last year we did the, just across the street from this, we put up the bollards and cleared out that drainage ditch. And then we did this one after we finished the project. We put the bollards up, and the person to the right of this picture, he had been storing his boat and had his blueberry bushes, which he moved after requested that. We put up the bollards to establish that as our property so people wouldn't be using it for those uses, and he has said that the bollards really upset his view. We've talked to him about fencing and landscaping and things like that, but he was not satisfied with any of those options and said he was going to come and address the council about that, but he did not appear this evening, so in case you hear from him, that's what's up.
Are there any questions, council? Yeah, I don't see any.
Okay. Third thing?
Yep.
Is Senate Bill 2816, which I don't know if it's still up, you can hear about that, but that was changing the maximum amount that can be levied by the transportation benefit districts for sales tax. Currently it is at 2/10%, and that would raise it to 6/10%. So kind of your consideration. consideration whether you want to support that in our seeing how much money we need to fix our streets.
And what was the Senate bill number again?
2816.
Okay. So we'll come to that when we get to the lobbyist report out in a couple minutes. Okay. For me, just you can take a look at Monroe this week. You can see how revenues are and everything compared to this time last year. Just off of 1 month, and again, this is just 1 month alone, you can see our sales tax revenues are up just about 11% from last year. One of the things that I found really interesting was the REIT. Let me see where that go. The REIT was up pretty substantially compared to last year. This is the real estate excise tax. It's up 218% from last year. Last year this time it was $23,000. Right now it's $74,000. So homes and property have been selling in January more this year than last year. Just a couple of other things. Councilmember Cutaback, Councilmember Scarborough, and I, and anybody else, if you'd like to, are meeting with County Executive Summers tomorrow at 10:30 at the Everett campus. If anybody is interested in going, please contact me or talk with me before you leave today. It is at 10:30, and everybody is invited, but you hit a quorum, and we'll need to figure that one out. We don't need to figure
that. 24 hours.
Oh, well, we can't figure that one out. So I can have one more person attend. If there's somebody that would like to attend, please just let me know. We'll be talking about 522 and other things. Park Place Middle School modernization. We did get in the Park Place Middle School drawings. You'll see on Facebook that we got two rolls that were about this big and building permit applications that fees that were not counted in as part of the January numbers there that you'll see at the end of this month. But it was a pretty substantial amount of paper and then application fees. The propulsion cable park, I think some of you have already heard that we've tentatively scheduled the groundbreaking for March 3rd. I understand that the check has been received and cleared the bank. And
I don't know if it's cleared the bank.
Oh, okay. And we are... I've asked staff to touch base weekly with H3O. We do a groundbreaking ceremony. I just want to make certain that they're ready to go. And if we had done the groundbreaking ceremony a couple weeks ago, you can see that there's nothing going on out there right now. It's just I want to make certain that things are a go. We'll do the groundbreaking ceremony. We've had a couple requests for former Mayor Zimmerman and Councilmember Gehring and Bridget Tuttle to Commissioner Tuttle, former Councilmember Tuttle, to be there. We realize that a lot of people were involved in this, so we're going to go ahead and we're going to open that up to anybody that served on Council, Planning Commission, and Parks Board over the last few years, so that they also can be there. It's a when this gets started, it's a big thing. So, see if there's anything else. I don't see anything else to really report out on right now, and let's go ahead and talk with Gene a little bit, and then we'll do the lobbying and the extended agenda.
Well, I just wanted to thank Council for these discussions we've had on the strategic planning. You know, it's the nuts and bolts of the city, and it's good discussions, and of course at the committee meetings as well, getting those ramped up. I just appreciate the conversations.
Thank you. So why don't we go ahead and hop through the lobbyist report.
Okay. We received Green Light Strategies lobbying report. There's not a specific House bill or Senate bill to discuss, with the exception of Director Feilberg's House bill that he brought up. And we could certainly discuss that, but it's more just a council peruse of... your position at this point in time, and if it still stands, we'll keep everything as it is, or if there's questions, we can field those. And I did send an email out in regards to the OPMA fine earlier this morning.
Okay. Thoughts on the SB 2816, which would increase the... What's that? SHB.
It is, well, I said SB, but it may be HB. Yeah, it's HB, 2816.
Okay, so House Bill 2816. And again, that allowed the taxing authority, if the TBDB wanted to increase the amount. Is that what I'm understanding?
Yeah, voter approved still, but it allows the maximum voter approved to be 0.6% rather than 0.2%.
Okay, so it doesn't mean that we're required to do it. Supporting it would just mean that we support the idea that should the public want to increase it, that they could. Council, do you want to monitor, oppose, support that? Councilmember Gamble.
And we're basically just, if we were support it, we're saying we support citizens, giving them the option to vote on 6%, up to 6%.
Right.
I don't see any reason why we wouldn't support voters being able to determine for themselves that they want to be taxed at a higher rate to help with streets.
Okay.
I agree.
Okay, does anybody oppose supporting it as opposed to opposing it? Okay, so we'll go ahead and we'll put it down as supporting.
That's all I have.
Okay. All right, does anybody have any comments on anything else on there?
Oh.
Also, and it's part of the mayor report out, but it's also part of this, I did get from the Department of Transportation the estimated engineering costs for 522. And no, it's not $10 million to do the widening. There were two things. There was the practical, you engineers always have something new that sounds like a planner got a hold of you. Practical engineering?
Yeah, practical design.
Practical design. So something about if they do this practical design process, it's $150,000 to $200,000, and that the fact that they've already done design on 522, usually it's about 10% of the project cost, which staff had estimated at a $76 million project, that would be $7.6 million for the design. But because the design work's been done in the past, they're estimating between $3 and $5 million for the design. Does that sound about right?
Good, let's do it.
And so I forwarded that information to our lobbyists so that they know what sort of a bottom line is. Look, you don't need to be asking for $10 million. You can be asking for $3 million. And, you know, it's still a large chunk of change, but it's not $10 million. We'll just see how that continues to play down in Olympia. And does anybody have any questions about that? Okay. All right. There being nothing else about the lobbying contract, Mr. Brazel, okay, would you go ahead with the other stuff?
The draft agenda, February 16th, 2016. The consent agenda, and then we have council member report, the P4 committee. Any additions or deletions?
Okay, so it looks like we have a fairly short meeting by this, and we will. Do we need to have our attorney present for this meeting since we don't have a whole lot?
I'll probably ask him to stay home that evening.
Okay, so we'll have the attorney stay home that next week, and since we have a light meeting, it would be good to continue the finance conversation. I don't know that we're prepared to do that, though, so I'm not going to put staff in that position to continue the conversation next week. Are there any items of discussion that council might want to have next week that might be easy to put together? Councilmember Camp.
Thank you. Not to that question, but I will be late next week, so you may want to change your pledge of allegiance to someone else.
Okay. Sounds good. Given the agenda, we might be done.
Mm-hmm.
All right, so you will be late next week. All right, Councilmember Hanford?
Yes, not to your question, but I was just going to say two things. First of all, on the 23rd, when we discuss campus planning, at least that's what's on the extended agenda, it would be possible to have aerial-type views of this whole area, as well as the available land in North Kelsey. So that as we're actually talking, we can be, I'm a visual guy, so we can be saying, you know, this is how much square footage is needed and things like that. That would be great. Nothing like new, just something we already have, I'm sure, somewhere on file. And then the second question was, Just out of curiosity, this land, city property right now, what is it zoned? Like, what could be built on it? What's it zoned currently?
Public service.
So would it be fairly easy to put homes on it?
Nope. Just you have to go through a comprehensive plan amendment and the zoning amendment to make it something that someone else besides the government agency could use.
Okay. But that's not too in-depth, right?
It's not impossible, no.
Yeah.
Just take a year.
Okay. That's okay. It. Thanks.
We'll also bring forward the campus plan, the last one, so council can refresh themselves with that. And then Diane has some information on how the city of Bothell recently financed their building, has a little brochure, so you can see how that was broke out. So that'll be part of the packet.
Okay. Mr. Councilmember Scarborough?
So what I'm assuming is, in your question, if we vacate this to build a new building or space on Kelsey or the school district property, you're trying to recoup money by selling this, and at this point we could only sell it to a government agency.
Well, you can sell it to anybody, it's just that no one else but your government agency could really do anything to it.
Okay, thank you.
So for the extended agenda, just getting council's gut reaction to this idea, I would like to continue the conversation that we started 2 weeks ago, that we continued tonight, and prioritize some of the things that we went over in the financial conversation. I'm concerned about the campus planning taking us, sort of diverting us from trying to finalize or get a little bit farther in that conversation. Would you be okay with having this be on March 8th and having the continuation of the conversation that we had tonight on the 23rd of February? Councilmember Gamble.
On the 23rd of February for the, I guess I was missing, I was, next week would just be talking about prioritization, that's what you're asking.
No, I don't think that we have enough time for staff to put that together for next week. So what we would be doing is we'd be...
Prioritization? We're basically looking at what has already been presented.
Just a second.
I think we have enough for that, right?
I was
just going to
ask
okay.
that earlier.
Yeah, okay. Gene, Mr. Brazel says that he thinks that we can go ahead and have that prepped for next week. So we'll do that next week.
Prioritization will work. That way we can, I mean, obviously we'd love to do it all, but get some sort of collective priority.
We can take the existing stuff and just put it in a little matrix.
Yeah, exactly.
Can you bring the comparables also?
Yeah.
Okay, and then break things down. Yeah, bring the we'll talk a little bit more offline, but I think we want to have the comparables there too because we didn't have that tonight. Okay, so what we'll do is we'll do the finance conversation. We'll continue that next week, the 16th. Thank you.
All right.
And staff, thank you. And we will keep the campus planning currently on the 23rd. Thank you. Councilmember Cutterback?
Diane, if you're going to make a matrix, could you put a column there that has possible funding sources, you know, and it's kind of, some of it's in the tax, but it's not clearly, just kind of a column that would help. Thank you.
Sure.
Okay. All right. Go ahead. Okay. We now have a need for a 22-hour executive session. No. Councilmember Gamble.
Motion to adjourn.
Second. I have a first from Councilmember Gamble, a second from Councilmember Hanford to adjourn. Any discussion on the motion? Seeing none, all in favor say aye.
Aye.
All opposed. Motion passes 7-0. Thank you very much, everybody. We're adjourned.
Sounds good.
Gotcha.